I'm Nikki Strong. This is VOA One The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Dan Friedel.
And I'm Katie Weaver. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak slowly, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, I look at what speakers told this year's college graduates at university commencement events. Then, Ana Mateo is here with a dusty episode of Words and Their Stories. After that, you will hear from Kelly Jean Kelly with the next part in our series on America's presidents. But first, here's Katie.
Recent shark bites in Florida and Hawaii and a suspected case in New Jersey have raised an age-old summer question for beachgoers. Is it safe to go in the water? Scientists and researchers who study sharks said the answer to that question is yes, it is safe. Dangerous interactions between humans and sharks are uncommon, and serious injuries and deaths from the bites are rare and growing rarer, scientists said. Still, the extraordinary nature of shark bites and the stories of survivors capture the imagination. In April, the story of a Hawaii surfer fighting off a shark got widespread public attention, for example. But it is a good idea to remember just how rare shark bites truly are, scientists said. There have been around 70 to 80 unprovoked shark bites yearly worldwide over the past 10 years. And not only are shark bites rare, they have been especially rare recently. There were only 57 unprovoked bites last year, and just 5 of them were deadly, reports the University of Florida's International Shark Attack File. There had been 9 such deaths in 2021. The shark attack file reported a year ago that one reason for the drop in bites might be the decrease of shark populations around the world. It is too early in the warm season to get an idea of how active this year will be for interactions between humans and sharks, said Greg Scommel. He is a shark expert with the Massachusetts Division of Marine Fisheries. If we get lots of bait fish and forage fish species close to shore, we have a super hot summer that draws people to beaches, more people in the water, then we can determine the risk, Scommel said. The United States and Australia are the sites of the most reported shark bites. The state of Florida led the world last year with 16 unprovoked bites, the shark attack file said. This month, 2 Florida fishermen were bitten by sharks in separate incidents less than 36 hours apart. The rate of shark bites has stayed steady in recent years. But many people may think attacks are more common because of new technology to report shark sightings, said Nick Whitney, a lead scientist at the New England Aquarium in Boston. Recently developed smartphone apps permit users to report shark sightings in real time. White sharks, bull sharks, and tiger sharks are the sharks most cited by the International Shark Attack File for unprovoked bites. They are large sharks that also cause the most deaths. However, remember that many interactions with sharks are with smaller species that are unlikely to cause serious injuries, said James Sulikowski, director of the Coastal Oregon Marine Experiment Station at Oregon State University. Those sharks might bite a human, realize we are not their desired prey, and move on, he said. You are at much greater risk of getting hurt in a car accident on the way to the ocean than you are to get seriously injured by a shark bite when you're there. Millions of people go to the ocean in the summer as the weather heats up, and that raises the possibility of interacting with a shark. But by taking simple steps, visitors can reduce any chance of a dangerous interaction with a shark, Sulikowski said. Such steps include avoiding the water early and late in the day when most sharks hunt for food. You should also not carry anything shiny into the water. We are intruders in their environment. What we can do is be logical and safe about that, and avoid areas where sharks are going to be feeding, Sulikowski said. When an interaction occurs, it's mistaken identity. We are in an area where a shark is looking to eat. I'm Katie Weaver.
Musicians, actors, politicians, business leaders, writers, and Nobel Prize winners were among the commencement speakers in 2023. At Howard University in Washington, D.C., graduates heard from U.S. President Joe Biden. Finnish Prime Minister Sanna Marin spoke at New York University, and the actor Tom Hanks visited Harvard University to offer his words. Other speakers included Nobel Peace Prize winner Maria Ressa, who spoke at Vanderbilt University in Nashville, Tennessee, the jazz musician Wynton Marsalis at the University of Michigan, and Nobel Prize-winning chemist Carolyn Bertozzi, who spoke with medical students at Stanford University in California. In most cases, students cheered advice and encouragement from the speaker, but in at least one case, they called out in protest. That happened on May 21st at Boston University to David Zaslav, the head of the media company Warner Brothers Discovery. As Zaslav talked, the students called out, "Pay your writers," so often, he had to stop speaking. The students were supporting striking film and television writers. Not all the events at Boston University caused disagreement. Ketanji Brown Jackson, the first Black female member of the U.S. Supreme Court, spoke to law school graduates. Brown Jackson discussed her legal career and her love for musical theater. She mentioned the famous show Hamilton and said students should work to find something you care about and get yourself into the room where it happens. The Room Where It Happens is a song from the show.
At New York University, Finnish Prime Minister Sanna Marin told graduates that it is not enough to want change. To change things, you have to take over, she said. Marin told the students they must not wait for others to solve the world's problems. She talked about the war in Ukraine and climate change. She expressed her concerns about artificial intelligence. And she told the graduates to take charge and make changes if they are concerned. These are challenges that need to be solved, she said, and there is no one else to do that other than you. Sabrina Vasquez was one of the graduates who gathered to listen to Marin on May 17th. She agreed with the message and told VOA.
Through our like education and our experiences, we were like, given the tools to be able to enact change, maybe not immediate, because change never happens overnight, but it's something that if we work towards consistently and it's always a goal that we're trying to reach, we can enact change.
Just days earlier, U.S. President Joe Biden spoke with students at Howard University, an HBCU, or historically black college or university. Janelle Johnson is the first person in her family to graduate from college. She said she was honored that the president wanted to speak to her and fellow graduates. Johnson told VOA that Biden's message was similar to what he might have used in the campaign. But he also told the 2023 graduates that they have a chance to change the trajectory of the country. The president then added, "And I know you will meet the moment."
This is something that I want to take with me, that the president could come here to my university and say that we have the power to change things in a climate where it feels like sometimes change isn't moving as fast as we want it to. It's knowing that the future is still bright.
Both Johnson and Vasquez agreed that they and fellow graduates have a chance to change people's lives, even if it is just in a small way. It's an important message for us to understand. We can be change makers, even right now, Johnson said. Commencement is an English word that means the beginning, so while both Vasquez and Johnson celebrated the end of something, they also know the next part of their lives is coming fast. "It's important to know that my work shouldn't stop here," Johnson said. I'm Dan Friedel.
And I'm Jill Robbins.
And now, words and their stories from VOA Learning English. Dust is very small pieces of earth or other matter. It is so fine, it floats in the air. And it gets everywhere. Inside, it covers our floors, our belongings, and other surfaces. Outside, it covers things as well, and a small wind can blow dust into our eyes and mouth. When we drive a car on dry ground, it can create a dust cloud. And when we run in a foot race, we can kick up a lot of dust too. That is why we have the expression, "Eat my dust." It means you are ahead of someone. They are behind you and must deal with the dust you have made. Sometimes we also say, "Watch my dust." This means you are so sure of winning that you are telling others they will lose. We often use these expressions to talk about a race or a competition. Using the same reasoning, if you leave someone in the dust, you have left them far behind. Again, you have won some kind of competition, and you have won big. However, if something bites the dust, it has failed. To bite the dust can mean suffering defeat. It can also mean something comes to an early end or is no longer useful. For example, if my old car dies on a long road trip, I can say my car bit the dust. In the past 10 years, many technologies have bitten the dust. Sometimes this expression means death in battle, but used this way, bite the dust, is very informal and not respectful. Our last dust expression is when the dust settles. In a dust storm, it is very difficult to see. When the dust settles, you can finally see clearly. So we use this expression to talk about the calm and clarity that comes after a big change or time of confusion. We often use it as advice or a warning. It is often a good idea to wait for a situation to calm down before making a big decision. For example, let's say you are moving to a new city and changing jobs. You will be very busy. So you can tell your friends that you will contact them when the dust settles. In other words, you will contact them when things calm down. And that's words in their stories. Have fun using these dust expressions. Until next time, I'm Ana Mateo.
Thank you, Ana. I'm Dan Friedel, and you're listening to the Learning English broadcast. We are joined now by Ana Mateo. Ana and I are going to kick up a little dust this week. Welcome to the show, Ana.
Thanks, Dan. I'm glad to be here. Kick up the dust indeed. You know, I did not realize how many dust expressions deal with competitions and beating people. Like, eat my dust, watch my dust, and to leave someone in the dust. Besides being in our expressions, dust also gets everywhere in our homes.
Tell me about it, Ana. I can see you have dust on the brain since it was not that long ago we talked about spring cleaning. I bet you found some dust after the long winter.
I did. The dustiest thing was my bookshelf. I had to take everything off of it and give it a good dusting. Dan, what is something you put away last summer that you had to dust off recently?
Ana, I can see how that might get a little dusty. For me, I had to dust off my baseball glove. It's finally time to play ball.
Good one, Dan. Okay, I have another question. When I think of dust, I also think of music. Many of our listeners probably know the song by Queen, Another One Bites the Dust. I can also think of Dust in the Wind by Kansas. Do you know any other dust songs?
Ana, you know, I do, in fact. I like the song Dust on the Bottle. It's a song from the 1990s by the country singer David Lee Murphy. Our listeners should check it out, but only after they have finished listening to this broadcast, of course.
Of course, Dan. Thanks for having me. And don't get into any dust-ups. Those are fights or disagreements. The next time you have a ball game.
Thanks for talking with me today, Ana, and thanks for the advice. I'll keep it in mind this week.
VOA Learning English presents America's Presidents. Today we are talking about Franklin Pierce, the 14th President of the United States. He took office in 1853 at age 48. At that time, he was the youngest person elected to the White House. Pierce was known for being social and for his good looks. But his personal life was full of tragedy, and he was not an effective chief executive. Over time, he has come to be remembered as one of the country's worst presidents. Franklin Pierce was born in the northern state of New Hampshire. He was one of eight children. He attended school regularly as a child, and he went on to Bowdoin College in Maine. There, he developed his skills as an excellent public speaker. He also became an able lawyer. Pierce's abilities carried him far, but his personal connections helped too. His father became the governor of New Hampshire. Shortly after, Pierce was elected to the state legislature. He soon became a member of the U.S. Congress, first as a member of the House of Representatives and then as a senator. Several important things happened in Pierce's personal life during those years in Washington, D.C. He married Jane Means Appleton. They soon had a son, but the child died after only 3 days. The couple went on to have two more boys. In Washington, Franklin Pierce also developed friendships with many people from the South. They defended the right of states to permit slavery. Although he was from the North, Pierce came to share the opinions of his Southern friends. He grew to dislike anti-slavery activists, who were known as abolitionists. As a politician, Pierce was a member of the Democratic Party and strongly supported the ideas of President Andrew Jackson. But politics did not appeal to his wife. She also did not like her husband's habit of drinking alcohol with his friends. Jane Pierce belonged to the temperance movement, which urged Americans to avoid the use of alcoholic drinks. So Pierce resigned his job in the Senate and moved back to New Hampshire. There, he stopped drinking alcohol and earned fame as a lawyer and public speaker. But tragedy struck again. His second son became sick and died. Pierce remained active in politics in New Hampshire. He helped the Democratic candidate for president at the time, James K. Polk, win votes in the state. When Polk entered the White House, he gave Pierce a position as a general in the Mexican-American War. Pierce did not earn the respect of his troops. In one battle, he passed out after he fell off his horse and crushed his leg. Some of his men, seeing what happened, fled the battlefield. Others called him Fainting Frank. Although Pierce had his critics, he returned to New Hampshire as a leader in the state's Democratic Party. Yet no one expected him to become President of the United States. Pierce's nomination came during the Democratic National Convention in 1852. Party leaders could not agree on a candidate. They were split among the three top choices. So the party turned to Pierce. They liked the fact that he was not well known or had taken any strong positions as a lawmaker. As a result, fewer people could object to him, they reasoned. Pierce did very little during the election campaign.
he did not need to. Many voters, especially in the South, did not like his opponent. When the election was held, Pierce won easily. But before he took office, another terrible thing happened. Franklin and Jane Pierce were traveling by train with their youngest son, Benjamin, who was 11 years old. The train went off the rails. Benny was killed instantly in front of his parents. Neither Franklin nor Jane Pierce ever really recovered. Jane believed their son's death was a punishment from God for her husband becoming president. As president, Pierce faced an extremely difficult situation. The country's ongoing dispute about whether and where to permit slavery was becoming more intense. Under Pierce, the dispute centered on the areas of Kansas and Nebraska. At the time, both areas were considered territories, not states. And each territory was above the line of the Missouri Compromise of 1820. That act, approved by lawmakers nearly 35 years before Pierce took office, banned slavery in northern areas, including what would become Kansas and Nebraska. But pro-slavery settlers demanded that Kansas and Nebraska voters, a group comprised of white men, decide the issue for themselves. A majority of U.S. lawmakers agreed. Under pressure, President Pierce signed the Kansas-Nebraska Act in 1854. The measure was one of the most important in U.S. history. It overturned the Missouri Compromise and canceled the ban on slavery. It incited years of intense violence between pro-slavery and anti-slavery activists, and it pushed a divided nation even further apart. The Troubles also showed Pierce to be an ineffective president. He could not ease the tensions over slavery, nor unite the country behind the Kansas-Nebraska Act. And he delayed using his power to stop the violence in Kansas until it was far too late. Finally, his sympathy for pro-slavery groups angered many in the North, including people in his own party. The Democrats did not nominate him again at the next election. After 4 years as president, Pierce returned to New Hampshire. He rarely socialized and began drinking alcohol again. After his wife died in 1863, Pierce seemed to disappear from public life. Americans heard little about him until his death in 1869. But he lived to see the ultimate tragedy of the Civil War, that he, like other presidents before him, had failed to prevent. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
And that's the Learning English broadcast for today. Thank you, Kelly, for that report. And thanks to our VOA colleagues for their work on today's program.
Most importantly, thank you for listening. For more, visit our website at learningenglish.voanews.com. I'm Katie Weaver.
And I'm Dan Friedel.